The second case is this New York case. Was a criminal case where there's a data dump of documents, you know, thousands of hours of video and audio tapes, and the court, you know, was discussing a feud over that data, but he did feel it necessary to quote this benefits and risks clause, and it's probably because of what one of the attorneys there said. He said, and I quote, "I have never used a computer. I have no training in computers. I don't even know how to use a computer, period. I won't even know how to turn one on." So relevant technology, if you don't even know how to turn a computer on, can be a problem. The 2018 case from Illinois, it was a case about ESI orders, and the parties were complaining about whose ESI order to adopt. And you could see some frustration in the judge who took this tone that's about like a middle school principal. And she said, discovery, BSI is still discovery, governed by the same federal rules of civil procedure. Don't freak out. And that statement there is probably worth its weight in gold. Don't freak out about the technology. I should also point out that in the same opinion, the judge cited to an episode of The Simpsons. So yeah, there's that. So take that for what it's worth. The North Dakota case, the judge, for no particular reason I could see, felt the need to quote the rules in the comments of the rules. I don't expect to find myself in North Dakota, but if I do and I hear something like that, I will say thank you, Your Honor, for your unique insight, and move on. Finally, this 2014 case was a class action in Delaware. Predatory lending, payday lender was playing games with discovery in order to avoid admitting that it was charging, you know, 300% interest or whatever. So during this course of these explanations to the court, the defendant blamed the technology limitations in its software for its inability to respond to discovery. Court teed off on this guy, made reference to comment 8 and said, professed technical logical incompetence is not an excuse for discovery misconduct. So there you go. Don't blame the technology, right? So there's takeaways here. First of all, don't freak out. Don't blame the technology. If you don't want to learn how to use a computer, at least have somebody next to you who does know how to turn on a computer. And speaking of such, you don't want to be this attorney. So if you've been holed up in a cave for the last year, there was an attorney in Texas who appeared by Zoom at a hearing. And unfortunately, he had a Zoom filter turned on at the beginning of the hearing, which, yeah, it turned him into a cat. So in his defense, this is a good attorney. He's has some renowned and wisely. He had someone with him who quickly disabled the filter, and the hearing went on without a hitch. And that's an important point that's not necessarily addressed in comment 8, but it's suggested by Rule 101. If you don't have the technical competence, then you do need to have someone with you to assist you. And hearkening back to the words of that Illinois judge, and don't freak out. Tell the court, Your Honor, I am not a cat, and fix the problem. So in the course of the rest of this this presentation, we don't have time to go into every possible technological detail that you may be running into in your practice. That is a 8-hour CLE of it on its own. But what I do want to talk about is a common issue for lawyers, and that is safeguarding confidential electronic information. And in particular, safeguarding the confidential information that's sitting on your laptop. Now, whether that's your data, your client's data, opposing party's data, I won't have a whole lot of do's and don'ts, but hopefully I'll give you enough information. You can understand the technology enough to know how to weigh the benefits and risks that are associated with storing and transmitting data that's on your laptop. And before I dive into the technology side of this, I should point out there are a few other rules that kind of touch on safeguarding electronic information. Rule 105 says a lawyer shall not knowingly reveal confidential information of a client. Well, duh, of course you're not supposed to knowingly do that. But you know, the real issue is, are you doing something negligent that will allow your client's confidential information to be revealed? Rule 114 talks about other client property should be appropriately safeguarded. In Texas, anyway, this usually applies just to paper that's associated with almost like money, you know, so stock certificates or deeds and that sort of thing. So that's not all that interesting. The one that's a bit interesting is Rule 1.6 of the ABA rules. Texas hasn't adopted them yet, but it says we have a duty to make reasonable efforts to prevent unauthorized disclosure of confidential information. And similarly, the restatement has a statement that says, you know, the lawyer shall take reasonable steps in the circumstances, yada, yada, yada. These